A life lesson learned. While I was pondering this, I realized a couple of things about the life lessons that I've learned. Most of them have been by observing the examples of others, and most of the rest have been through the mistakes that I have made myself. And so this evening I want to tell you about a mistake I made about half my life ago, just to put good distance there, when I was about 15 or 16. And I want to tell you what I learned from it and how it still affects me today. So before social media platforms were a thing, talking about Facebook, Instagram, whatever, the thing back then was blogging or weblogging. And blogging, if you're not familiar, was basically an online platform where you could journal about things that interest you. And at the time, in particular, there were two blogging platforms. One was Blogspot and the other was Zanga. And I'm curious, is anyone familiar with Zanga? Okay, great. So I was 15 or 16 and I started a Zanga account, but my parents didn't know. And it wasn't that they had told me that I couldn't, but it was more that I knew that they would disapprove if they found out. And I posted various things, nothing of much consequence. And at the time, I had just joined our youth group. Well, I was a preacher's kid, and so I was especially full of righteousness and zeal for the Lord. And I saw some imperfections in our youth group. And in fact, I found it to be seriously flawed in some areas. And so one night, I went home and started writing a post about my youth group, in which I called out some of the imperfections that I saw. And it was a rather indiscreet article. And I finished it very late, perhaps very early in the morning, and I posted it feeling as if I had properly dispensed of my righteous indignation. Well, the next day it was like a bomb had gone off, and people began commenting on that post. And it wasn't just one or two comments, but this grew into a 40, 50, 60 comment sort of thing, not just from my youth group, but from friends of people in my youth group, and I'm not sure how far it got, but I got raked over the coals. And there was a few people that kind of agreed with me, but mostly I felt like I was just going up in smoke. And I realized I'd made a huge mistake. And I also realized that the fallout was way beyond anything I knew what to do with. So I then did the first thing that I had done correctly. I went to my parents and told them what I had done. And they were properly horrified as well. But with some counsel from my dad, I deleted the post and I went about writing an apology in a public way. And then I made a few very difficult phone calls to some individuals who I knew I had hurt especially much by the post. And I began to learn from my mistake. So what did I learn from my mistake? Well, I learned a few things, but two things have stuck out to me that have impacted me deeply ever since. And the first one is this: make things right with the people you hurt. Calling those people up was one of the hardest things I ever did, but it was also one of the best things I ever did. And not only did it give me peace, but it also restored a channel of friendship and conversation with those people that I would have never had again. And in the years since, I've found that humility in my mistakes, in my relationships, has a way of restoring those relationships and even deepening them sometimes. And I found that many times when you go in humility and make something right, the person you wronged will in the long term probably remember your humility more than the mistake that you made. So that was life lesson number one that I learned. The second thing I learned was how not to fall into this trap again. And I began about that time to practice a little rule in my life that has saved me many, many challenges in relationships. And so I'm going to share that with you. And that is this. Never, never, never write and send something late at night. Unless it's about a completely neutral subject like, hey, I want to let you know I let the cat out. Just don't, ever. Go ahead and write if that makes you feel better, but never send it. Wait until you get a full night's rest. And there have been countless times that I've got up the next morning and read what I wrote the night before and realized, and sometimes was embarrassed by my response in the situation the night before. And young men, and ladies too, for that matter, when I was dating my wife, it was a long-distance relationship, and we did a lot of our dating by email, and I applied this rule then as well. And so instead of writing love notes late at night, I would get up early, very early in the morning, and go to the local Panera Bread and on a Saturday morning and be usually the first customer in there at 6 o'clock in the morning. And then I would spend hours composing my love letters to my wife. And it was successful, so there you go. So life lessons learned from my mistake as a 16-year-old. Do what it takes to restore relationships when you make a mistake. And number two, never ever write and send a sensitive note at night.
A life lesson learned, the power of communication. Ecclesiastes 3:7 says, abbreviated, a time to keep silence, and a time to speak. Communication is one of the teacher's most powerful tools. Communication can take the discouraged and bring courage. It can take courage and make discouraged. It can move the ignorant to knowledgeable. It can turn enemies into friends, and friends into enemies. The same thing that sends men into the machine guns also sends men with messages of peace. It guides travelers and instructs students. It creates tension and dissolves it. It makes life possible for some and impossible for others. In the end, our destiny hinges on it. This is knowledge. We know that communication is very powerful. But I want to share some stories with you that highlight the power of it, that brought it on a more personal level to me. How does it impact me and you? Were Zach and Lisa late again this morning? I asked Miss Co-teacher. Yeah, that makes 6 mornings in a row. And usually we're singing when they walk in, so it disrupts everything. Don't they understand that school starts at 9, not at 9:10? Do they not like coming to school anymore? Maybe Zach took that comment a little more personal than I thought he did, and now he doesn't like coming anymore. What can I do? She stated with rising passion. That can be frustrating. I wonder, though, if maybe that's just part of their culture. Part of the culture that they're from is, you know, their parents, they show up late too. Maybe that's just part of the problem there. What about trying to talk to them? Sure, well, tomorrow when Mom comes, we'll talk to her. Tomorrow afternoon arrived quickly. Good afternoon, Maria. How are you doing? And after the normal pleasantries, one thing I've been wondering about recently is how Zach and Lisa have been getting to school so late. Is there any way we could have them at school a little sooner? Maria quickly stammered. Yes, I know. I'm so sorry about the delay. You see, the children have to pack their own lunches, and I make sure we don't leave until they're packed. And turning around to face Zach and Lisa, she told them in no uncertain tones, you are getting your lunches packed in time tomorrow morning. So how have Zach and Lisa been doing this last week? Mr. Co-teacher asked again. Excellent. They've been coming on the dot every day. Communication can solve many frustrations. Scene number two. Please hold still while we do flashcards, I replied sternly, and talk quietly. Okay, Nettie replied sweetly, returning her straying limbs to the unusual position of normal. 5, 17, 23, 4, 9, 5. Good, I thought to myself. So far she's staying inside the square I taped on the floor, and her voice is staying on medium. 6, 32, 12, 11, 28. Uh-oh, here we go again. 19, 23, 45, 7. Okay, time to quit flashcards. Go back to your seat and put your head down for a couple minutes. You fell outside the square again and were shouting much too loudly. With downcast eyes, she slumped back to her seat. That evening, in discussing with her foster mother asked me, so how's she doing these days? Just 5 days ago, I've begun giving her a new medicine. One that's supposed to be with fewer side effects, but I think I've noticed she seems to be a little more wired recently. Almost too much so. Have you been seeing this at school? Definitely. Communication can bring understanding to my students' behaviors. It's Friday morning, the day so many teachers love. I was running around gathering art supplies when I found out that my lack of preparation had caught up with me. Hammers? How are we going to do string art without hammers? What should have taken 30 seconds the afternoon before was now taking 5 minutes, texting all the students' moms with high hopes that they still had time to grab a hammer before coming to school. Communication can save lots of time. Scene number four. I wonder what's up with Janice, the teacher mused to himself one afternoon. She seemed so absent-minded the last while, so moody, quite unlike her normal cheery self. The next afternoon, quite randomly, the mother swung by, making her usual rounds around the classroom, just checking up on her students, seeing what the teachers had to say about them. So how's Janice doing these days? Is everything going okay? Well, yeah, pretty well. Her grades and relationship seems to be doing really good. However, the last couple of days haven't been going too well for some reason or other. Oh my, I was hoping it wouldn't be too obvious. You see, a number of days ago, one of her friends that recently left the church dropped a letter by that deeply disturbed her. Janice is still working through it. Communication enlightens and creates empathy. Could I please talk with you after recess is over? I asked one of my upper grade boys. Our normal lunch game of soccer was usually pretty rousing, but recently it seemed to be changing. The teams were really small, and he was the only one that could offer much competition against me, so I always placed him on the other team. Needless to say, we battled hard. So after recess, I asked him why he was resorting to pushing the rules and even getting pretty physical the last while. Stammered around, well, I don't know. It's just not really fair. You just make me look dumb all the time, and I can't stand it. I hate how you like to show how much better you can do it than the rest of us. Communication brings self-evaluation. What do you do when your co-teachers don't enforce the hands-off policy? When mixed messages go home about what clothes they wear on the program day? When you find out a parent doesn't appreciate the book you're reading for story time? Communicate. A man many years ago faced this dilemma when God told him to communicate. The Lord spoke to Jeremiah in chapter 1, verse 6 and 7, that said, Jeremiah said, "Ah, Lord God, behold, I cannot speak, for I am a child. But the Lord said unto me, Say not, I am a child, for thou shalt go to all that I shall send thee, and whatsoever I command thee, thou shalt speak."
A father and son were walking out a lane one day, and the little boy was following his dad. As they were walking out the lane, the dad looked back, and his little son was walking right in the tracks that his dad had left. And his dad was struck by the implications of that picture of his little boy following right in his footsteps. The lesson that I'm going to speak about a little bit is that my actions will dramatically affect others. Just like that dad understood or realized how dramatically his actions could affect his little boy as his boy follows right in his footsteps. Paul said, "Follow me as I follow Christ." That's a beautiful, beautiful statement, and it's a confident statement. It's wonderful. Paul could say that because he was living like Christ wanted him to. He could say that with full confidence, "Follow me as I follow Christ." Could you say that to your students this coming year? "Follow me as I follow Christ." How do you follow Christ? Do you follow him all the time? Do you follow him on Sundays? Do you follow him everywhere, every day of the week? How does it affect how you live? How does it affect how you relate to people? We have our past actions, and we have what we do now, and we don't know what we're going to do in the future. Our past actions can't be changed, but they can become something beautiful and helpful if they are covered by the blood of Jesus. But we can't change what happened in the past. You are the one that decides whether those things in your past are taken care of or not, whether they are put under the blood and made into something beautiful that God can use. I may have to face consequences for the rest of my life for decisions I have made in the past, but it can be used for something beautiful if I'm redeemed. My actions today may affect the future, or they will affect the future, even though we don't always think about that. Your present actions will be watched in a way that you probably never have had them watched before, if you're teaching for the first time especially. You've probably heard it said that a teacher lives in a glass house or in a fishbowl or something that you can see through. And everybody watches you. Your students watch you all the time. The parents watch what you do. The church watches what you do. Everybody watches. And you can't hide. It's kind of an open book sometimes, it feels like. Your students watch how you drive. They watch what you say about authorities. They watch whether or not you're on time. They watch how dedicated you are to come to church. They watch what your enthusiasm level is for outreach work in your local community. They watch how you spend your money. They watch how you relate to the physical handicapped child or person or mentally handicapped. So remember the lesson: my actions will affect others. Does that fact scare you? It should, to some degree. It should just make us stop and think, yes, my actions will affect others, dramatically affect others. Or do you kind of look at that and say, yeah, I know, but just kind of give a shrug of your shoulders? Don't forget that. Your actions will affect others, especially thinking about it in the school year. I want to share with you a very personal experience that riveted this fact in my mind. And it was one of the most sobering lessons that I learned since I began teaching. And I don't need to go into lots of detail, but suffice it to say that I had hidden sin in my life, and I was teaching school with this hidden sin in my life. I was not living like I should. I had been working on it, but I was not living above it. One of the older brothers in my church found out about this, and he took it upon himself to help me. And he was mentoring me and going through some things with me, and I will always be thankful to him for the part that he played in that. I'll always be thankful for that. As part of the recovering process, I made a public confession in church that I had been involved in wrong things and I had been living dishonestly. I was not living above board. And of course, my students heard that. My students heard me give that confession. And I'm sure I don't know how it affected them, all of them. But I do know that it was specifically told to me by one of their dads that it severely affected some of my students. It hurt them so deeply because they understood that I had been living dishonestly and I had been putting on a facade, as it were. I had betrayed their trust. And praise God, I was able to regain it. God redeemed my situation. But I had betrayed their trust, and you all know that trust broken is very hard to regain. Satan tries to convince me, he tries to convince you that the things that you have done or the things that you are doing now that people don't know about won't matter. You can have that in your life and still teach school. You can have that in your life and still do good things. But that's a lie. And we must face it as that. We must make sure that we never allow ourselves to live in that lie. If God hadn't changed me, I am quite certain that my school teaching would have ended sooner than it did. And rightly so. I had no place to be in the classroom. You have no place in the classroom in authority over your students if you're living in sin or if there's anything hidden in your life. God commands us to complete holiness, and my actions affect others. Your actions affect others. If you think about Jesus and how he lived on this earth, again and again he came in contact with people that were hurting and people that needed help and people that had problems. And again we read of these people meeting Jesus and going away changed, a dramatic change in their lives. You could think of the woman who had the issue of blood. You could think of the 10 lepers. There's lots and lots of stories. Blind men who could see. So many times, Jesus dramatically altered the course of a person's life. We are Jesus' followers, and we represent Jesus to this world. And as you begin this school year, you will be representing Jesus to your students. And the question for me, for you, is, will my students be changed after they've been with me because I've been with Jesus? Will they be changed more into Christ's image, or will they be driven further away? The choice is yours. Let Jesus change you. Let him shape you. Let him make you more into his image. Do it now. If there are things that you feel are not clear or things that are hidden, do it now. It must be taken care of. God will hold you accountable for how you treat that. You will be held responsible. Remember that who you are and what you do dramatically affects those you relate to.